fly, while their bones spend eternity down in the mine. Way down in the mine, your tears turn to mud, and you can't catch your breath for the dust in your room. Loading hillbilly gold,
wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Hey, thank you, boys and girls, for being here with us today, especially to the Lovingston 94.7 crowd. Down in the mine, I think Rusty Simpre trying to get us started on the proper topic, although a little sad and lonely, can be a lonely place. And we'll find that out for sure from our guest today in the studio, J.W. Randolph. J.W., how are you?
Good. How you doing, Rick? Thanks for having me.
A lot closer into that microphone.
How's this, huh?
That's so much better. Thank you so much. And I'll crank it up a little bit on my end as well. J.W. Randolph from Appalachian Voices. He's the legislative associate. A little later in the hour, we'll have Austin Hall dialing in and talking as we get on a little more national topic and talking about some bills that are up in Congress and will be brought forth. But we're going to start off with J.W. here for the hour as we talk about coal. Write down the phone number, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We were talking about coal and sort of the history of coal and what's going on currently with coal. Mountaintop removal, a topic that's certainly getting a lot more bigger scene out there as it's coming forth in the Congress and Environmental Protection Agency just making a big decision. It has a lot to do with mountaintop removal. J.W., you're here from Appalachian Voices. We'll toss it in at the end of the hour as well. There's a big party going on next week sometime, Wednesday, February 2nd, where there'll be, I guess, sort of a money fundraiser down at Southern with bands playing and all that. We'll throw that in. Maybe if Katie from Appalachian Voices is listening, she can call us a little bit later with the proper information. But one of the reasons that you're here is that mountaintop removal isn't getting all the news that people like yourself and organizations that you work for believe that it should.
Right. So I first saw mountaintop removal in 2005, and I think for a lot of people, seeing it firsthand is a life-changing experience. For me, it was right here in our home state of Virginia, on Black Mountain, which is down in Wise County on the Kentucky border. But over the last 5 or 6 years, we've really seen mountaintop removal grow into something that there's a greater awareness of, not only in Central Appalachia, not only in states like Virginia, but across the country. And that's been true both with the public, with the media, and with members of Congress.
And when you're talking about seeing it firsthand, you're talking about seeing what?
Sure. So, in 2005, I went to a place called Cayford Mountain that I'm sure a lot of listeners have either heard of or seen, where a man named Larry Gibson lives. This property on Cayford Mountain has been in Larry's family for several hundred years. And from his house, he'll take you and you'll be walking through the beautiful Appalachian woods that we all know and love, that millions of people every year travel from all over the world to come and see. And as you're walking through this woods up a hill, we all of a sudden came to a ledge, And where we should have continued walking uphill, we looked down into this moonscape canyon that was hundreds of acres of pure destruction, where, as I said, where Larry said he used to look up and watch horses run along the fields up on top of the mountain, we now look down into the Kayford Mountain mountaintop removal site. And we said, Larry, this is horrible. You know, this is horrible. What can we do to help? And he said, well, I'm so glad that you offered to help. You know, do you promise that once you leave here, you'll help me? And foolishly, I said, sure. And here I am 5 or 6 years later, still fighting a fight that we expected to be over a long time ago. We hoped would be over a long time ago. But fighting a practice that is one of the most harmful practices currently going on in the United States, not only ecologically, but mountaintop removal is having a horrible impact also on human health. On human health and community well-being. And I think that that's where a lot of people who don't think of themselves as environmentalists come to the issue, because people are being denied you know, their ability to lead healthy lives, and people are being denied access to clean drinking water.
Well, you know, I'm going to assume that there are two parts to every story. So let's go back and start at the beginning of this. We'll be talking about coal. Mountaintop removal is certainly a big part of the conversation for the hour. Guest in the studio today, J.W. Randolph, a legislative associate with Appalachian Voices, which I'm assuming is a non-moneymaker.
We're a nonprofit, and we're all, everybody who works for Appalachian Voices, you could call us non-moneymakers if you wanted.
Okay. But I want to hear about the brief history of coal, because to me, the picture in my head is of the guys going down in the mines in Virginia, West Virginia, Kentucky. But it's a much larger area of the United States.
That's right.
And I have these visions of what it does is the coal comes out and then you burn it and turn it into black smoke. But we were talking before we started about the history of coal goes back so much further.
That's right. One of my favorite authors is a man named Jeff Goodell, and he says there should be a monument to coal in every city and town in the United States. Coal was the force behind the Industrial Revolution. It's what got America to the moon. It's what created one of the most prosperous nations in the history of the world. I think that it's true. Mining is one of the most dangerous jobs you can do, and every person who goes down to mine coal deserves our respect and deserves to be honored. But what I think we've seen in the last half century in particular is that coal is dirty and harmful to people. It's dirty and harmful when you mine it. It's dirty and harmful when you move it, and it's dirty and harmful to people when you burn it. We're continuing to grow our knowledge of global climate change, but what coal mining has meant for Appalachia has been not only a continued loss of coal mining jobs throughout the last half century, but you have an area where one of the most beautiful and valuable ecological places in the United States, one of the most biodiverse ecosystems in the world, is being destroyed by the tens of hundreds of thousands of acres. More than 1.2 million acres of Central Appalachia have been destroyed by mountaintop removal. It's leveled more than 500 mountains and buried and polluted more than 2,000 miles of headwater streams. And so we're starting to see these impacts because we're getting to the bottom of the barrel, essentially. The good, thick, high-quality coal seams that are easy to get have been mostly mined out. And we're seeing the traditional mining jobs, where you think of the person going down into the mine shaft, we're seeing a lot of those traditional mine jobs lost to machines. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, if you look back half a century ago, in West Virginia, they employed over 130,000 miners. And if you look now, that number of miners is between 20 and 30,000, roughly the same number of people we employed around 1900.
What I'm hearing is we shouldn't use coal anymore. Is that true? Because what I heard was both economically, the loss in the jobs, and ecologically, the damage done to get to the coal we're using today is we should just stop. Find something else. Focus on something else.
Well, the point that Appalachian Voices tries to make is that mountaintop removal in particular is an unnecessary way to extract an energy resource. I think it's irresponsible to deny that coal has adverse impacts at all stages of its life cycle. But our point is that mountaintop removal is blasting apart some of the oldest mountains on Earth. It's harming people. It's having a negative impact on our economy. And it's unnecessary to provide the jobs and energy we need, and that mountaintop removal specifically needs to end today.
All right, we are talking about coal. Mountaintop removal, a major part of the conversation for the hour. J.W. Randolph here, a legislative assistant with Appalachian Voices, a nonprofit working to end mountaintop removal. 11:11 here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. J.W., a little brief history about coal and how important it was to the growth of the nation, but also mentioning how little of it is left comparatively and how few jobs are still available comparatively. But how much coal is being used today, and especially in terms of current production versus demand?
Certainly. Well, what you've seen nationally is that as a percentage of our electricity, 10 years ago, coal would have provided 55 to 60% of our electricity nationally. We've seen that drop over the last decade to around 44 or 45%. Particularly in central Appalachia, coal production has declined 20% between 2008 and 2010, and it's expected to decline another 50% by 2015. And so that what you're seeing is a coal industry that is extracting coal from the bottom of the barrel via mountaintop removal. And maybe I'll back up and just explain a little bit about the process of mountaintop removal, if that's all right. Up to 600 vertical feet of a mountain are loaded with ammonium nitrate fuel oil.
All right, you have to give me a better mental picture. 600 okay. feet. I mean, turn a football field on its end.
Twice.
Okay.
So turn a football field on its end and double it, and that's about 600 feet. And so imagine looking at, if you're in Charlottesville, imagine looking up at Afton Mountain. I don't know what the height of Afton Mountain is, but you can kind of imagine what the impact might be on that ridge. And so a coal company, to get at the seam underneath that ridge, is going to systematically blast apart the top of that mountain. All that immense amount of material and rubble is then shoved directly into the adjacent river valley in what's called a valley fill. And so this is where we're seeing over 2,000 miles of streams being buried and polluted. At the end of these valley fills runs a whole host of heavy metals and chemicals like arsenic and lead and mercury and selenium and chromium, and these horrible things that then get into the drinking water supply of the local communities and the millions of Americans in the eastern U.S. that depend on Appalachian headwater streams, once they move on further down the mountain. So as we said, mountaintop removal has destroyed an area the size of Delaware, 1.2 million acres. Over 500 of America's oldest mountains have been destroyed this way. As we're seeing the coal jobs go away, we're saying, I think it's important that we say, what do we want to have in 25 years when the coal is completely mined out? As I was telling you before the show, my wife and I are expecting our first child this month. And when she enters the workforce, she can either have no coal jobs and no streams, or she can have no coal jobs and streams. We would, of course, prefer the latter. And that's why it's so important and gives me a new perspective on protecting the region that we love and call home.
J.W. Randolph here from Appalachian Voices, as we talk about coal and mountaintop removal. J.W., we keep referring to Appalachia. Mm-hmm. Does Afton Mountain qualify as Appalachia?
Sure.
Sure. Does it real truly? I mean, in terms of drawing the, you know, the pencil picture?
Sure. If you look at the entirety of Appalachia, it actually runs from the deep south, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, all the way up into Canada, the Appalachian chain does. And the Appalachian Regional Commission recognizes it like that. When we talk about Central Appalachia, we're talking about a specific part of that region that includes southern West Virginia, eastern Kentucky, southwestern Virginia, and a couple of counties in Tennessee. And so that's when we talk about Central Appalachia and Central Appalachian coal production, that's the area that we're focusing in on.
Let me take a moment and thank Dixon Disposal for allowing us to have this conversation today. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. When Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort it and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. Call them up, 434-978-2111. Online, DixonDisposal.com. All right, JW, so Appalachia goes from Alabama, Georgia, all the way to Canada. Does that include the 500 mountains that have been destroyed?
The 500 mountains are specifically concentrated. About 60% of mountaintop removal has taken place in eastern Kentucky. And the rest of it has taken place in southwestern Virginia, southern West Virginia, and Tennessee. Specifically in southwestern Virginia, there are six or seven counties that produce coal. I believe that the largest one is Wise County. In Wise County, specifically in our home state of Virginia, 25% or more of that entire county, of all the land area, has been strip mined. So you see a county in one quarter of all the land area in Wise County has been removed. And yet the poverty in that county is still above 20%, and it remains one of the poorest parts of the state, and one of, as far as health is concerned, one of the worst off congressional districts in the entire country. The impacts to Virginia specifically, within focus on those few counties in southwest Virginia, have been unbelievable. Specifically, 67 mountains have been identified in Virginia that have been destroyed. 151 miles of Virginia's headwater streams have been destroyed. And a lot of communities now are looking at, there's a permit that's pending called Ice and Rock Ridge. That's a 1,200-acre permit from a company called ANG. A few years ago, ANG was responsible for the death of a three-year-old child who was crushed by a boulder that was pushed down a mountain in southwestern Virginia. And Jeremy Davidson, a three-year-old kid, was crushed in his sleep. And I think that right within our state of Virginia, we're seeing how every part of this process is dangerous, not only for the people who are doing mining the coal, but how a lot of those dangers are pushed off onto people in the surrounding communities.
All right. Shortly, we will be having another member of Appalachian Voices call us up. Austin Hall will join us, and we're going to be talking about some of the legislative issues that are going on. But JW, mountaintop removal has been a problem for years. I mean, I did a program on this topic a long time ago, and I've been sitting here trying to think about how long ago I did it, and I'm going to say 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. Has anything been done in 7 years? It seems like I'm having the same conversation, but hopefully different people are listening, or we are exciting people who might have been listened the first time around. Has anything been done in 7 years?
Absolutely. And so one of the things that is really obvious within this coal mining region is that the political clout of the coal industry has long outlasted their ability to provide job growth or broad-based economic development for other people in the community. So you see the coal industry continue to have this tremendous political power, but not really be able to create a positive standard of living for the communities where they're mining coal in Central Appalachia. We have seen during both the Clinton and Bush administrations steps to actually streamline mountaintop removal and to enshrine the process. The Obama administration has actually been different. For the first time in history, we've seen an administration take steps to reduce the impacts of mountaintop removal. Now, that's important that they reduce the impacts, but you're not going to be able to do mountaintop removal and continue to provide jobs or protect people's water or health. But the Obama administration, and in particular the Environmental Protection Agency, have stepped up in a big way. Last year, we saw them issue a guidance for conductivity in headwater streams. And basically what that said was you can't have heavy metals exceed a certain amount in these streams below valley fills. And that's been tremendous. As we saw earlier this month, they vetoed what would have been the largest mountaintop removal permit in West Virginia's history. It was a courageous and heroic stand that will save lives in the long run, and we applaud them for that.
11:21 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about coal, mountaintop removal. J.W. Randolph here from Appalachian Voices, where he is a legislative associate. Feel free to dial us up with your question or comment, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Let me give you the market Tatogra Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly cloudy today, highs in the mid-40s, lower 50s in Lynchburg and Richmond. Mostly cloudy with freezing rain after midnight tonight, lows 25 to 30. Then mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of rain, sleet, and snow tomorrow, highs 32 to 37. Right now in the valley, it's fair, 36, Lynchburg 38, 37 in Richmond, 35 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tatogra Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's thank Ben Around Tattoos for their support. You can find Ben Around Tattoos in Charlottesville and downtown Waynesboro, where they feature male and female tattoo artists. They have thousands of designs available and can create work from a design you provide. Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro in Charlottesville at 701 West Main Street. For more information, it's benaroundtattoos.com. And we know there are lots of radio stations and other music sources out there, but only one that brings you the Wake Up Call every Sunday. And the only reason we can do this is because of listeners like John Herman, Betty Graham, and Gene McCusker, all who supported us in the fund drive this past fall. Also because of program underwriters, like the ones you're hearing from this hour, as well as Corner Outlet, Helix Computers. So stay tuned, tell a friend, and join us here next Sunday on the Wake Up Call and support us on our upcoming fund drive in March. Or head to WNRN.org and see how you can help us now. All right, I see that the phone is ringing on line two. Chris didn't get that. But on line one, I guess Austin hung up. Austin, try us back. I only have so many fingers and I don't multitask very well. I need a sous chef here. But J.D., we were getting ready to talk about some more political issues. I see Kristen might have a call for us. But I'm going to answer this because I think this is Austin. Austin, are you with us?
This is me. How you doing, Rick?
Hi, Austin. Austin Hall, also with Appalachian Voices. And we are going to be taking calls, but I'll play my little you're on hold, you're not on hold game. So dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Austin Hall now in the program as well. Austin, my understanding is that you are involved in a more national scene, correct?
Yeah, you got it. And first of all, thank you so much for having us on. You mentioned in the last few minutes that you feel like you've been talking about this for years and not seeing a change. But it's radio shows like this, and it's the ability for us to be able to communicate within the communities that we live that ultimately are going to bring a solution to, you know, the problems that we're facing, not only in Appalachia, but in America. So thanks. Thanks for having us on, and thanks for letting us talk about an issue that's really important.
Well, for somebody who grew up on the Chesapeake Bay, you know, the thought of mountaintop removal to me is like, well, that sounds awful. because I wouldn't want something similar to happen to a place that I feel is beautiful. And the thought of seeing some of these pictures that I have seen, and you can go to APP Voices, appvoices.org, and see some of the photos. And the thought of seeing that in a live and much more grandiose manner frightens me. So that's why it's important to me. But again, we were talking about the fact that this has been ongoing for years and years and years. And so I'm curious, what is being done now? J.W. Sitt made a comment about how things have been, the Obama administration has done some different tasks. But as a legislative assistant, as people who are doing things on a much more legislative manner, what is being done to make this change?
Sure. Well, at Appalachian Voices, we focused on two pieces of legislation that are aimed specifically at stopping mountaintop removal. The Clean Water Protection Act in the House of Representatives was introduced in 2002. This is a two-sentence bill with bipartisan support across the board that is designed to keep coal mining waste from mountaintop removal operations from being dumped into Appalachia's headwater streams. So when you're blowing up the top of a mountain, you're blowing up those two football field lengths of mountain, you're creating millions of cubic yards of waste. And I know JW just mentioned this. That's, you know, chock full of a witch's brew of toxic chemicals and heavy metals. And what we're trying to do is make it illegal for the coal companies to dump this toxic mining waste onto the headwater streams that are, you know, the source of the local drinking water supply for communities in the region. The Senate, the United States Senate, has followed suit with the introduction last Congress of the Appalachia Restoration Act. Once again, bipartisan support from Senator Lamar Alexander, who represents a coal state, and Senator Ben Cardin from your home state of Maryland, Rick. And so nationally, what we do is, you know, we're a grassroots organization. We don't have millions of dollars to funnel into campaigns to sway political decisions. We don't have enormous industry ties that can, pull votes in our direction. What we have to do and what we focused on doing is traveling across the country with people from impacted mountain communities and speaking in every single congressional district across the country, in every single state across the country, about this piece of legislation, about what is going on in Appalachia, and essentially helping start a national movement so we can create pressure on our federal government to end this practice that, I mean, I think that you really eloquently just described it. I mean, you grew up on the Chesapeake Bay, and maybe you're not from the mountains, but just the sheer notion that in the United States we're blowing up mountains and dumping toxic waste into streams is pretty appalling. And I think that the nation shares that same sentiment. And our job is to make sure that people are aware of the issue, are aware that they can get connected into federal legislation that will make this stop.
11:28 here on the Wake Up Call. That's Austin Hall from Appalachian Voices. On the phone, we also have J.W. Randolph, who is here in the studio. Welcome to dial up with your questions or comments for either of these gentlemen. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Austin, did I hear you say when you first started talking about these bills, did you say that they were first introduced in 2002?
Yeah, you got it.
And that's a decade ago.
The Clean Water Protection Act was introduced into the United States House in 2002. Now, this was in direct response to a rule change in, that was started under Clinton, but that was finalized under the Bush administration, that makes it legal. Now, this is important. That makes it legal for coal companies to dump toxic mining waste into our freshwater streams. This pretty much flies in the face of one of the landmark legislations passed in this country, the Clean Water Act. By allowing an industrial polluter to use our public waterways as their waste bucket. And 2002, Frank Pallone and a Republican from Connecticut, Christopher Shays, introduced the Clean Water Protection Act, which would reverse that decision and keep mining waste out of our streams. And you're right. and we've been fighting for this piece of legislation to get passed since 2002.
Why is it so difficult if it's bipartisan? Why has it taken a decade and it's still not being? You said two sentences.
Yep.
And why is it so hard? What are the other majority of politicians, what do they have against it?
Well, I think, you know, in talking about Appalachia and in talking about coal, you can't skim over the history of Appalachia without talking about its political power. And the political power that the coal industry has had such a great contributing factor to. So, you know, JW was mentioning that, you know, southern West Virginia, eastern Kentucky, southwest Virginia, you know, we're looking at some of the counties with the highest rates of poverty, the highest rates of you know, high school dropouts, the highest, you know, rates of certain kinds of cancer, and basically at the top of the list of every negative statistic that you don't want to be at the top of the list of. But from these impoverished regions of the United States have come some of the most powerful and influential politicians, you know, in American history. Senator Robert Byrd, longest-serving member of Congress. President pro tem of the United States Senate, Congressman Nick Rahal, a 35-year incumbent in the United States House, was the ranking member of several important committees, Senator Mitch McConnell, minority leader in the United States Senate, Congressman Hal Rogers, chair of appropriations in the United States House. So we're talking about some of the most powerful politicians coming from one of the poorest regions of the country, implementing enormous political will to essentially carve out a safe place for the coal industry to do whatever it wants. And so we finished last Congress with 173 bipartisan co-sponsors on the Clean Water Protection Act, but we met roadblocks from Congressman Nick Rahal from Southern West Virginia, who is absolutely connected with this industry, as are many politicians in the region, and will do everything they can to make sure that regulations don't apply to this practice. And so as we have national support and, you know, support across the aisle, we still have these very powerful roadblocks who are still beholden to the power of the industry in the region.
All right, let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for helping us have this program today. They are now featuring the Columbia Omni Heat, a waterproof down jacket with 700 fill power to provide protection from wet and cold weather. Columbia Omni Heat jackets are available at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. They are the outdoor store that knows the outdoors. All right, J.W. Randolph, Austin Hall, we did get a phone call. Actually, I've had a couple here, and you're welcome to dial in as well if you're listening. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Here's a nice and simple question, guys. Where do people think their electricity is coming from? And I'll take that to mean, you know, isn't it coming from coal? And why are you arguing against getting the coal out?
Sure. I'll field that one, J-Dub, if you want to step in with anything to add.
Sure, go ahead.
At Appalachian Voices, we absolutely realize where electricity comes from. I think that's one of the main reasons we work so hard on this issue is because we do know. About 44% of our nation's electricity comes from burning coal. We burn about 900 million tons of it a year. And our argument is not that we should turn off the lights tomorrow, that we should end coal production in the United States tomorrow. First and foremost, we have to deal with a type of mining that has leveled 1.2 million acres of mountains, and has buried 2,000 miles of streams of mining waste, and accounts for less than 10% of the United States' annual coal production, which is the equivalent of about 4 to 5% of our nation's electricity. So first and foremost, we recognize that coal has a very important role in our nation's energy portfolio. We also realize that there are negative public health and environmental health impacts to burning coal. At the top of that list is mountaintop removal. At Appalachian Voices, we are committed to ending mountaintop removal as soon as humanly possible and creating a just transition in the region to sustainable energy sources, which the United States has in abundance. And so that's the short answer. We absolutely understand where our electricity is coming from. And that's why we're working so hard, because we think we can change it. We think we can provide more jobs to the region. We can create more infrastructure in the region without, you know, blowing up the tops of our most ancient mountains, polluting headwater streams, and really, really diminishing the quality of life for anybody that has to live within a community that's close to a mountaintop removal operation.
Hey, JW, I got a follow-up question here from another question that seems like a good follow-up. JW Randolph, if we stop mountaintop removal, how will that affect electricity?
I don't believe that it will. And to piggyback on that question and what Austin just said, the lowest hanging fruit as far as energy in really in the entire Southeast is energy efficiency. The Appalachian Regional Commission issued a report 2 years ago that said we can create 15,000 jobs a year in the region of Central Appalachia, 15,000 jobs a year by investing in energy efficiency for the first 5 years. That dwarfs the number of jobs that are involved in surface mining, and would help us overcome any energy deficit that we would see. Additionally, what we've seen is that the costs of surface and underground mine coal aren't always that different, and that states like Kentucky and West Virginia for 2008 and 2009 were paying more for coal that was surface mined than coal that was mined underground. And so we think that the costs to mountaintop removal, you know, as Austin said, ecologically, the public health impacts, and the long-term impacts on the communities in our region, are one piece of it, but it's also just not a great financial decision to invest in this this coal that is increasingly expensive. It's gone from $40 to $150 a ton, back down to $50 a ton, and now it's rising back up to $70 or $80 a ton. I mean, this is an incredibly fluid market, the energy market is. It's incredibly fluid and incredibly complex. We know that we can provide a much better alternative than mountaintop removal for our electricity production and for job creation.
A quick question. You said energy efficiency will create, how many would you say, 15,000 jobs?
15,000 jobs
How does
year.
Turning off my light and only doing my laundry in the evening after hours, how does that create a job?
Well, I'm no expert in this, but there's a difference between energy efficiency and conservation. And I think conservation is what you're talking about when you're asking people to make lifestyle changes. You know, turning off your every third light bulb, or, you know, getting an energy, you know, getting appliances that or doing your laundry less. I think what energy efficiency is talking about is home weatherization, you know, making buildings that hold in heat and air conditioning better, using the resources that we have and energy that we produce in a wise way and in a way that's consistent with how people in the region have always used their resources, you know, well.
All right, we are talking with JW Randolph here in the studio, Austin Hall on the phone from Appalachian Voices. Dial up your question, your comment, 979-0919-1877. WNRN Rocks. Let me thank The Backyard, the university's culinary secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. The Backyard invites you to enjoy outdoor patio seating in their heated tent provided by Commonwealth Event Company. The Backyard has a seasonal menu and seasonal brews on tap and is available for private events. For more info, 202-8215, and you can find The Backyard on Facebook. Austin, I'm going to toss this to you first. Who has the greater impact on such topics as mountaintop removal, as energy efficiency, and the legislation you're talking about? Is it the state or the federal government? Is it Congress or the presidency?
For us to end mountaintop removal, Appalachian Voices has advocated for a legislative fix to the Clean Water Act, a legislative amendment to the Clean Water Act, to restore that piece of legislation to its original intent to keep mining waste out of clean water. And Rick, I think that the people who have the most power are us. It's when the American citizens demand that our energy sources come from clean, renewable sources. When we demand that we're no longer blowing up mountains and destroying communities and polluting water for our electricity. When we as a nation speak up, when we decide that this is an absolute priority, we're the most powerful. And we're striving to make that happen by speaking across the country, by doing Regio programs in Charlottesville, Virginia, making sure that everyone is aware that our energy usage has a cost. And it may be an unseen cost, but it's a cost we need to realize. And so we're taking that message across the country in hopes that we can influence Congress to pass this law. Obviously, the Obama administration, as JW mentioned, has taken a lot of broad steps, and they've done a lot of great work to rein in this practice, to veto one of the largest ever proposed permits in southern West Virginia. But we have to go a step further, and we have to stop this practice that contributes such a small amount of coal to our electricity grid. And the power is with us, and it lays within everyday citizens who can contact their legislators and say, I want you to support the Clean Water Protection Act to preserve clean water, or contacting your legislators to advocate for renewable energy on a town level, county level, state level, and federal.
And one of the ways that Austin mentioned that we do a lot of programs like this around the country and are involved in several targeted congressional districts around the country, another thing that all of your listeners can do to see their connection to mountaintop removal is go to a website called ilovemountains.org. At ilovemountains.org, there is a My Connection tool where you can type in your zip code. You can see which coal-fired power plant is connected to your electricity grid, in other words, where your electricity is coming from. And then what Appalachian Voices has done is we work with Google Earth to identify surface mines and underground mines in the region so that you can then see where the coal that's being burned at that plant comes from in central Appalachia, what that mine is called, who owns that site, and in particular, what the surrounding communities are and how they're being impacted by the practice of mountaintop removal. So I would encourage people to go to ilovemountains.org and check out their connection to this practice.
All right. It seems like I had a call from Joan in Waynesboro, and it seems like you guys just answered her question, what can people do, ordinary citizens do, to help stop mountaintop removal? So, Joan, I think the best place to start sounds like ilovemountains.org, and start there and contact your federal representatives.
Yeah.
All right, 11:43 here on The Wake Up Call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
A year after the remains of Morgan Harrington were discovered, her parents raised questions about using familial DNA to find a break in the case. Three Charlottesville city councilors make a move and vote to build a large dam to increase the size of the reservoir. And three teenagers are arrested for breaking into more than 200 cars. On newsstands now, The Hook. No cash needed. And let's thank Sugar Snap for their support today. They offer gently used baby and kids items, including shoes and hats, plus maternity and nursing clothes. Also at Sugar Snap, you'll find cloth diapers and diaper bags and locally made items. Kid-friendly play area is available while you shop. More is at sugarsnapconsignment.com. All right, I see the local number 979-0919 is taken, but the toll-free 1-877-WNRN Rocks is still available. Dial us up. Austin Hall, J.W. Randolph here talking about coal and mountaintop removal from Appalachian Voices. Guys, you mentioned Spruce Number One Mine, this great step taken by EPA, but what's the difference between that? Because in doing my homework, the EPA also approved 5 or 6 or 7 other mines while either just before or just after the same time frame for denying this one? Don't those all add up to the one that they might have said no to? That's like saying, no, sweetie, you can't have dessert, but you can have another two slices of pizza.
Well, I think that what Appalachian Voices focuses on is passing a federal law. We've seen the Obama administration take positive steps, and as we said, nowhere near enough to protect the citizens of Appalachia from the impacts of mountaintop removal. But when you have an administrative action like a guidance or like an action from the EPA, the next president, say President Palin is elected in 2 years or in 4 years, two years or six years. She can set us back to zero with the stroke of a pen. And I think the people of Appalachia deserve permanent protection from mountaintop removal and from the impacts that it's having on our communities and to our state. And even more specifically, to get back to Joan's question about what can people do, what are some of the things that people in Virginia can do that will impact this conversation? Senator Webb referred to strip mining as rape in his book, Born Fighting, that specifically is about southwestern Virginia. He obviously has very strong feelings about mountaintop removal and strip mining have done to the Appalachia that he loves and the people that he loves. Senator Webb had a lot of support in this area, I'm sure, and he has not yet kind of landed on what his position is on mountaintop removal. Call Senator Webb's office and say, Senator, we want you to support the Appalachia Restoration Act, a bill that would do something very simple, a bill that would stop the dumping of mountaintop removal mining waste into our headwater streams. This bill has bipartisan support from Senator Alexander in Tennessee, a Republican, and Senator Cardin in Maryland, a Democrat. Call Senator Webb's office and say, Senator Webb, we want you to end mountaintop removal, support the Appalachia Restoration Act, and do it as soon as you can.
Austin, I understand the need for the support, and my personal feelings are irrelevant to the program, but I don't understand why it's a high five for the EPA for not approving one particular mine, but sort of a shrug of the shoulders, not for you, but for many, to say, well, we have to take what we can get.
Yeah, Rick, you make a really great point. And I think it ties into the conversation we were having earlier about, for 150 years, the coal industry has dominated this region economically. And it's a fact that we acknowledge and are proud of, that these men and women in coal mining communities of Appalachia have contributed such great things to our nation. But on the flip side, we have a tremendously powerful industry who will fight tooth and nail if anything or any administration or any Congress tries to regulate them. So the EPA has taken bold steps to what they quote-unquote will minimize and mitigate the impacts of mountaintop removal. We are in no way high-fiving them for reducing the size of mountaintop removal mines in Appalachia, cutting the stream damage from 6 miles to 3 miles. That in no way for us is a victory. But for them to exercise their veto power on Spruce Number One Mine, the first time in the 40-year history of the Clean Water Act that the EPA has used their veto power on a mountaintop removal mine, they absolutely deserve some cred. Now, we feel at Appalachian Voices and with the organizations that we work with in Appalachia and with the communities that we work with who are living with the very daily impacts of mountaintop removal, not only from the blasting and the dust and the coal trucks and the preparation plants and the bad water, we do not feel that any administration can regulate this practice. There's no way to make mountaintop removal safer for communities. There's no way to make it safer for the environment. So we applaud the EPA for stepping up and vetoing this mountaintop removal permit. We certainly would like to see every mountaintop removal permit that applies to dump mining waste into streams vetoed. But we understand that an industry with the power of the coal industry is going to fight this administration and fight the EPA with everything it's got, to weaken its rules, to weaken its guidances, to its ability to protect clean water, which is why I know that JW and I are consistently going back to these two pieces of legislation, but we feel we need permanent protection. We need an act of Congress to restore the Clean Water Act and provide permanent protection for these communities and keep mining waste out of our streams.
11:50 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk about coal and mountaintop removal with Austin Hall and J.W. Randolph. Guys, we got a call from Kate in Richmond talking about how she has read a book called Strange as This Weather Has Been by, I believe, Ann Pancake. Is that correct? Are you guys familiar with this?
I've not read it.
No? Well, Kate seems to think that everyone should take a great look at this. She says, I really like the show. Appalachian Voices is a great group. So she's on your side, so sounds like that might be something worth picking up. Blue Ridge Graphics, allowing us to be on air today. You can find them at Mead Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. And the man, Drew Thompson, just walked in the room. He's here for Les Temps Perdue at Noon, best of 80s and 90s alternative, REM, Eurythmics, Dead Kennedys, and so many others. Brought to you in part by Orzo and the Visualite. Requests are always welcome on Les Temps Perdue. All right, guys, don't forget there is time for another call or two if you have a comment to make or a question. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. Guys, here's one I'm going to try and just float through. Caller thinks that these mountaintops can be used for wind farms. Also, Dominion Power, you could add money to your bill that goes to alternative energy. Feedback? JW? Is there a way to not have the mountains blown up and turn them into wind farms as well? Although my little brief understanding is that there are people out there who don't like the wind farms next to their property because they kill birds or are aesthetically non-pleasing, et cetera.
If Austin's still on the line, I'll pass this to him. I know he's worked at this both at the local, state, and federal level.
Austin?
Sure. I certainly don't want to digress into a conversation about wind. That's an entirely different radio show, but Appalachian Voices advocates for renewable energy on residential, commercial, and community scale. There are places in Appalachia where the wind resource is phenomenal, and the ability for the wind industry to create permanent jobs, to create electricity with zero emissions, zero pollution, zero stream damage is proven. There are communities in Virginia and all along the Appalachian Mountains that fundamentally do not like how wind turbines look or feel that they're detrimental to the environment. And at Appalachian Voices, while we will advocate for renewable energy like commercial scale wind energy, we feel that you really can't just say, oh yeah, absolutely, we can just have a straight across the board switch with mountaintop removal for wind energy. It really doesn't work like that. Yes, certainly there are mountains in southern West Virginia that are slated for mountaintop removal mines. For instance, the Coal River Mountain in southern West Virginia is one of the highest mountains in that part of the part of the state. It has excellent wind resources. The community members have formed a coalition to fund studies, to fund wind measurement readings that show that this mountain could absolutely be a home to a commercial wind farm, create energy in perpetuity, and save the mountain from a 6,000-acre mountaintop removal mine. So, absolutely, we can preserve these mountaintops and produce clean energy. It's not as simple as saying we'll just trade one for the other. And I think that different communities throughout Appalachia have different opinions about wind energy, but Appalachian Voices will certainly advocate for it where there is local community support.
This is WNRS WNRN, excuse me, WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg, doing all my legal requirements. I see the phone is ringing. I want to take a moment and remind everybody that Wednesday, next Wednesday, February 2nd, at Southern, just off the downtown mall, so wherever you're listening, drive up, find the downtown mall, go to Southern. There will be a program, Charlottesville Loves Mountains, a fundraiser for Appalachian Voices, local bands, fundraiser for a nonprofit organization. Come on down, hear the tunes. I think the doors open at 7. The music starts at 8. So let me take a moment and remind you of that. And I also want to throw a shout out to Katie from Appalachian Voices, who helped me put all this together. She deserves a thank you as well. J.W. Randolph in the studio, Austin Hall on the phone, as we talk about coal and mountaintop removal. Hey guys, we talked about the bills, some of the legislation that's out there, but we haven't really focused on Senator Manchin, who is a Democrat from West Virginia, if I have my notes right, and the importance that he's about to play in a lot of the upcoming legislation and whether or not it happens. Austin, you're the national guy, so chat about him for a moment.
Senator Manchin was an immensely popular governor in West Virginia, is now their junior senator in the United States Senate. He is proving to toe the industry line, as do many politicians who feel that to be electable from Central Appalachia, you have to disregard public health, factual analysis about coal reserves and the production or the ability of the industry to produce jobs. And what we're seeing is unfortunate from Senator Manchin's office, is essentially just a wholehearted attack on what the EPA is doing to protect clean water. And he will be a roadblock. And Appalachian Voices and the Coalition to End Mountaintop Removal's journey to create a sustainable future for the coalfield communities that are within our own state. We feel, once again, that although these Senator Manchin's power is immense and his perch is pretty lofty and he reaches a lot of people, we believe wholeheartedly that the power of the citizen and the power of a collective voice from the United States demanding for clean energy and demanding for an end to mountaintop removal is stronger. So we think that we will continue to work with Senator Manchin's office. We think that leadership from these coal field politicians could turn the tide for creating jobs, for maintaining clean water, and for turning around a region of the country that is a national treasure and should be protected instead of destroyed. So Senator Manchin will play a big role in the energy discussion about Appalachia. We will work with his office, but we will also organize nationally around an issue of mountaintop removal that is fundamentally wrong and needs to end, and we will win this fight with him or without him.
And to take it back to Appalachia, Senator Byrd, as Austin said earlier, is the longest-serving member of Congress in American history, and he used to be the biggest roadblock. Through a lot of public pressure, through a lot of meetings with people from his state, through a lot of factual analysis of the impacts mountaintop removal was having, he came to a point when he said, you know what, the most important resource in West Virginia is not our coal, it's our people. And he admitted the majority of Congress and the majority of the American people oppose mountaintop removal, and that the coal industry needs to get ready for change.
Gentlemen, thank you so much. It is 11:59, time to turn it over to Les Thames-Perdue. I can see someone dialing in. I'm sorry. The show will be up on podcast, cvillepodcast.com. You're welcome to listen to it. You're welcome to make comments. We will put access to the appvoices.org website there, so you can write in to JW, Austin, or anyone else if you have questions or comments that you'd like to make. Once again, I'll finish off by reminding you that the fundraiser for Appalachian Voices is this Wednesday, February 2nd, Groundhog Day. Wouldn't that be fun? You could just repeatedly go back and forth and back and forth into the show. Fundraiser for Appalachian Voices at Southern Charlottesville's Downtown Mall. Doors at 7, shows at 8. Guys, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you very much.
Next week, Hawes Spencer will be here from The Hook as we talk about the Biscuit Run Park and everything that goes along with that dirty scene.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.